Welcome to the Mindfulness Monday podcast. I'm your host, Carly Jean Puck, and as a member of the local Mental Health Advisory Council in Cook County, Minnesota, I'm passionate about promoting mental well-being. Every Monday, we delve into the world of mindfulness and discover practical techniques to cultivate a more mindful and balanced existence, making it make sense for your daily life. Rotating between short practices and interviews with folks whose work intersects with mindful living. Time to get more mindful.
I'm really excited to talk to you.
I'm grateful to be here. Thanks, Carly.
Let's start with maybe because of the way I have connected with you through the studio. Let's start with the studio that you run in Duluth and go from there.
Sure, that sounds great. So the studio I run in Duluth is Spelia Yoga. We're a trauma-conscious studio, and we really focus on what we call our whole being, well-being approach. So just really seeing everyone in their wholeness as whole human beings, and that we really want to meet people in a trauma-conscious manner. We believe in being healing-centered, so really focusing on what's possible for people, not only on the traumas or the struggles that they're having, but the healing that is possible. And we believe that's inherent in all of us, and also being growth oriented so that we all have the capacity to grow and transform no matter what we've been dealt in our lives. And we really do experience and see that in the work that we do. I've experienced that personally on my own healing journey. But we offer a ton of different classes every week, lots of different styles from gentle yin restorative to more vinyasa and everything in between, trauma conscious focused classes, private special classes with survivors of sexual assault to people in recovery, such as DWI court and many different other special populations, which is a gift. And we also offer in-depth trainings. So from just workshops that we have, like we just had a beautiful flower essences workshop, to some more advanced teacher training, such as our 200 hour, and we also have a 300 hour, and we like to break that up into modules, such as what you had taken with us, the trauma conscious certificate program, really opening up this to people beyond just those who are yoga instructors. And we've had a lot of people, as you experienced in the training you took with us, from many different backgrounds, like tattoo artists and doctors and therapists and people in human services and nurses. It's really neat to share these beautiful gifts and teachings with such a diverse community of people. I think that covers it, but let me know.
It's such a beautiful space, and physically it's a great space, but there is a sense of safety and comfort that I think that comes when you walk into the studio, and that is pretty special.
Thank you. We really work hard to create safe space. And just in some of the ways we signal to people that we're safe and we're open and affirming and be who you are. We're not here to judge anyone. We're here to accept and love everyone and be hospitable. And we also try to avoid having things like positive vibes only, because we want to make sure that people can come no matter where they're at and, you know, what they're struggling with, and receive some support and healing, hopefully, in community. And then, of course, we also hope that everyone who works for us and represents us can just do that in an embodied way in how they greet people and work with people and are invitational and respect people's boundaries and personal space and their bodily autonomy and choice. And so those are ways we try to create that safer space for folks.
So that's the journey of the studio, but what is your journey to yoga and maybe mindfulness practices overall?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a trauma survivor. I grew up in a really chaotic home as a child. Both of my parents struggled with substance use disorders. So I have a lot of lived experience due to that. And I therefore actually had a lot of my own mental health struggles as a child and adolescent and a young adult in particular. I tell people and they're surprised that I used to be violent. I used to get in fights at school because I didn't know how to deal with difficulty or anger. I've been suspended before, and I finally came to realize that wasn't very helpful. And thankfully, I lived with my grandparents in relative foster care from the time I was in eighth grade to my senior year, which was a saving grace for me. And my grandma helped get me connected with therapy and other interventions that really helped me. But it really was when I was around 19 years old that I stumbled into a yoga class that I finally experienced the sense of peace and calm that I had never experienced in many years that I could remember. And I say that yoga saved my life because I really do think a lot of this stuff can be life or death matters. I know that I've shared this with you, Carly, but like I lost a sister to a drug overdose, a heroin overdose in 2017. And that could have easily been me if I didn't have the interventions and the support that I've had along my path. And yoga was a big part of that because it was finally the recognition that I'm not broken. I am not wrong or bad. I'm inherently whole. And I have the capacity within myself to access that. And these practices, yoga means to yoke or unite mind, body, spirit. And it's the science of self-realization. And it's one path of many paths, mindfulness, being a sister to yoga, that really helps us awaken to that possibility for ourselves. And so I really experienced a lot of healing through yoga. And that's why I became a yoga teacher and have since, I know, continued on that path. I'm also a social worker. And I have my master's in social worker and work in the human services field. And it really partners beautifully with my yoga and mindfulness practices and teaching to really meet people where they are and see people in their wholeness as people in their environments. And recognizing also like the structures and constructs and systems that we're within and how we are really impacted by that. If we have toxic, unhelpful structures like racism and things that contribute to poverty and people's suffering, it's harder for people to be well, right? Or if you have a toxic work environment, those kinds of things. And so really hoping to acknowledge that in the work that I do across all of this. And then I came across trauma-informed yoga around 2014. And then it just like everything awakened for me and aligned really beautifully, just knowing that I was experiencing yoga and it wasn't always in a trauma-informed way. It was still very transformational, but bringing that extra layer of providing trauma-informed yoga and trauma-informed care and responsiveness across my life and work just really creates the best environment for, I think, personal healing for people. So.
It's really beautiful. When you hear the word mindfulness, what comes to mind? What do you think of when you hear mindfulness?
Yeah, for me, what I've come to, I really love Ellen Langler. She's considered the mother of mindfulness. She has a concept called direct mindfulness, which is so beautiful to me because it's so easy. It's basically just like being in the present moment, paying attention, and being aware. And there's lots of practices that we can engage in that help us with that. And of course, there's tons of beautiful mindfulness practices that are far more complex and take more time, like mindfulness-based stress reduction, which I've taken and it's beautiful. And I use that, but I really love the simplicity of direct mindfulness because it allows us to just wake up in the present moment and experience the vividness of our life exactly as it is. And it's every moment we can either be doing whatever we're doing mindlessly,
right,
or mindfully. And with mindfulness, we just, I think, have more access to joy, pleasure, beauty, what is working, what is good, the sense of gratitude and awe that's available to us. So that's what I think about when I think of mindfulness and the way that I like to engage with mindfulness in my life.
Are there practices that maybe they're practices you rely on sometimes, or they're your go-tos since the beginning of yoga. What are your mindfulness practices that you rely on?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of mindfulness tools in my back pocket, but some I really work well with, like mantras or affirmations. Some simple ones that I have, and you can incorporate them with breath, is like one that I love is breathing in, I'm doing my best. Breathing out, I let go of the rest.
Oof.
I'm doing my best, I let go of the rest. Another one that I really love that could go with breath too is I often find myself like feeling frazzled and pulled in a million directions. And I was diagnosed with ADHD as an adolescent, and I definitely have those tendencies still. And so that's so helpful for me to just be like, just this one thing. If you can just focus on this one thing and be present for it, that's really helpful. I also practice just 3 deep breaths. And try to get into my body and just be like, okay, maybe soften my gaze or close my eyes, soften my jaw, my tongue, my shoulders, and just be for a few moments and maybe find a few deep breaths. And that doesn't take very long, but it's super significant. And it's something, obviously, in a yoga class, we teach these things, but it's really cool because I've been incorporating this in my workplace. And so I supervise a team, and we actually start with mindfulness in every one of our meetings, and it doesn't have to be super long, but I try to like I always do one of those like a moment to arrive practices, and sometimes I'll share a quote or something thought-provoking for us all, but those are some of my go-to mindfulness practices. Another like thing that I love to do, and it's so beautiful and makes such a big difference when I do, is mindful eating or drinking. And so that's just not being distracted by a million things or on my phone scrolling, doom scrolling, and just allowing myself to eat mindfully and really think about where this food came from and all of the beings that were a part of it and nature. And when we do that, you can't help but be in incredible awe. And just that experience opens us up so much, opens me up so much to the beauty of life and the goodness of life. And yes, there's a lot of stress and hard things and bad things in the world for sure, but that's not the whole truth. And it's so cool to be able to experience that whole mosaic of life rather than just the hard, negative, stressful things, which are often the things we get stuck in our day-to-day life and moments. Yeah, those are some of the things I do and think of.
I appreciate too that you're sharing practices that are accessible, right?
Yeah.
And I've talked with this about this with past guests a little bit as well, but there's a lot of maybe misconceptions or things around mindfulness and yoga and meditation that it's like woo, floating on a cloud.
Totally.
And if you float on a cloud, more power to you. That's amazing.
Yes,
don't
we're
stop
gonna
doing that.
Levitate soon.
Yeah. But the mindful eating, can you take 3 deep breaths before you start a meeting?
Mm-hmm.
I love the reminders that it is not something that needs to be co-opted into this capitalist self-care
right
thing, that it's actually, you have everything you need, which is, I think, a message that you try and convey a lot.
Yes, absolutely. I love that so much, Carly. And I agree with that profoundly. Yes, of course, there's amazing techniques and practices we can do that can be really helpful and transformational for people. And there's a lot of power in that, but it doesn't have to be, I have to meditate sitting on a cushion in exactly this way for an hour every day, or like I have to buy these things or pay for this thing. Like, it really is accessible, and we complicate things for ourselves, and then we don't do it because we don't have the time and ability, and then we feel like failures and we're bad at mindfulness. Yeah, so I love that. And I think you're right. There is a lot of misconceptions about mindfulness and yoga being woo-woo, but there's actually so much evidence-based research out there now that shows that it's not woo-woo at all. It really changes our brain. It changes the way our nervous system works, and we can actually rewire our brains through these practices in really profound ways. Our brains, They call it neuroplasticity, where it literally changes neural pathways in our brains and can help us feel more at ease, more peace, less anxiety, less depression, if we practice these things and strengthen those pathways. And so I think that's really powerful, and it's really helping people come to this and not be nervous about it or judgmental about it. But yeah, really recognizing the power that exists in these practices.
I love that. I really appreciate that, because everyone's approach to why things click into place, maybe, or how our brains work is different. And some people are really going to connect with the science, which is great. What is the neuroscience? What is the science of what my body is doing when I practice yoga? Why does it feel good? And like you're saying, there's more and more coming out. And then about that, and even the science, like you said something earlier, there's so many things in the world that are stressful and that are institutionally problematic and to deal with. And there's also all these amazing things. And science shows us too that we need joy. We actually need joy. I know myself, I can get bogged down in trying to fix everything and do the most and make sure, am I doing enough for the world and for myself? And in order to be making change, I have to be like surly or show that I'm really in it. And that actually doesn't help our bodies and our minds. It actually hurts us. And I love that we can be like, that's not just me, that's science. Joy, we need joy. Science said so.
Yeah, absolutely. I've landed on this, and I often share this and say this in yoga spaces, is just like the most revolutionary act we can embark upon is our own healing, right? And then when we do that in space with others, it's that collective healing. And really, that's so powerful because that ripples out and has such a great impact on our communities, our workplaces, our families, the world. And I think that's one of the most profound things we can do. Of course, we need to have activism and do other things as well. But if we're doing that from that place that you were speaking of, like, I think it can really go sideways and cause a lot of harm for sure. Yeah.
You've started to touch on it there, but I think sometimes it's underestimated maybe the power of what mindfulness can do in a community. Because I think it's one thing to get people on board, maybe to be like, yeah, it can help your mental health. And you're like, okay, that makes sense. But can you speak a little bit to how that ripples out? What effects mindfulness has on community?
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, I just had heard this quote in a training I took where it was like, the most generous gift you can ever give is your attention.
Ooh.
And you're right, like your attention. And that's like being mindful, it's being fully present with others. It is being a witness to whatever it is that they are facing. So for example, in something like Public Health and Human Services, where I work, I was a child protection worker for many years. And when we meet people in a mindful way and we're able to have our own nervous system regulated, that can often mirror for others and they can feel more calm and safe around us. And then we can meet them where they are and just give them our attention and our presence and support them with whatever's going on in their life. And hopefully through that, for example, in social work, in a child protection case, for example, that someone would be more apt to be open to receive some of the supports that are available to them. I also think it can get, we see sometimes things break out in violence, right? And so sometimes I just saw this person, Alok, they were interviewed on the We Can Do Hard Things podcast, and it was so beautiful. And they're a trans person. And I saw this post that they made, which was so powerful to me. So it's people that are like basically throwing hate at them in the most profound way. And they said something like, I wish there was a puke emoji because I would, or a puke button instead of the like or whatever, because I would do that for everyone. And this person, instead of responding at that same level with that hate back and getting into this fight, they were like, I love you more than you could ever hate me. And I was like, whew, it gave me chills because I just feel like that is so much more powerful than getting to that energetic level of hate and engaging in change in that way. And I feel like that's really revolutionary. because that sort of like hate begets hate that never really leads to anything good in the world. And I've seen just in our own community, it's like people coming into a yoga class, like one of my favorite classes we do on a monthly basis is a yin and healing cello class. And there's a lot of people that come to that class and they just share how this practice and the things that we speak about and mindfulness practices that we do and the somatic body practices that we do with the yoga postures and the healing music really creates change for them. And then I see people going back into their lives, into their workplaces, into their families, and maybe instead of reacting to things in these default ways we do that maybe are not super helpful and actually cause others and ourselves more suffering, that we maybe pause a little bit and we learn to calm our nervous systems and maybe take some deep breaths and respond more effectively and ways that are important. And that doesn't mean that we don't have boundaries or we don't stand up for things or speak truth to things, but that we just do it in a way that maybe is a little bit more effective. And so those are the ways I really see things rippling out into the community. So much better happens when we are in a place of regulation. So getting into the science a little bit, in the polyvagal theory, when we are in a place of regulation, it's called the ventral vagal state. And that is what is called the social engagement system. When we are dysregulated and in fight or flight or total shutdown, we actually don't have the capacity to access our neocortex, right? Part of our brain. And that's like the part of our brain that is rational, that can see solutions. And we don't have the capacity to actually connect with others. We are shut off from that capacity. So that is like a really powerful way I see this impacting, is that, oh, we can get back in that social engagement system, that more calm, regulated space. We can access our neocortex and think more clearly and see solutions, and then be in communication and community with others in such a more helpful way, a more healing way. Yeah. And so I think that's some powerful ways that we see mindfulness rippling out and making change in the world.
I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate too the idea that you brought up of being able to self-regulate and come from that space. But that doesn't mean that you don't fight for change, right? It's so easy to get into that binary thinking of you're either mindful, and which sometimes then gets equated with passive, I think.
Yeah.
That mindfulness or practicing yoga or believing in the idea of peace means
right.
that you're automatically passive versus active
right.
and coming from a different space.
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things that I've learned over the years, because I've vacillated in that world a bit where I'm like, oh, if I'm yogic and mindful, that means I'm always peaceful and I'm always calm and I never get upset about things. And I often have betrayed myself or bypassed truth to please others, to get along, and to make peace. And sometimes I've been getting into more compassion work, self-compassion. And this woman, Kristen Neff, is a beautiful compassion teacher. She teaches a lot about self-compassion, but she just came up with this book called Fierce Compassion. And she's like getting into what you're saying exactly. Like, we need both. We need compassion for ourselves, for others, but we also need fierce compassion. And that's exactly what you're talking about. That is like action. That is doing things, that is speaking up, it's setting boundaries, and it's like being in alignment with what our needs are, our truth, while also like respecting others as well. And yeah, I think that is so deeply important. And when we are bypassing that and not doing that, we're actually not in that social engagement ventral vagal state. We're more in like a shutdown state. So that can be that freeze response, or what's also referred to as like the fawning response, where we're just like, oh, I just want to make sure everything's okay. And we're actually not in living from that regulated space. So I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge. And I appreciate that you have.
Yeah, thank you for speaking more on that, because I've also experienced that when I first got into my yoga teacher training. nobody do this, but if you scroll too far back on my Instagram, years and years ago, you can probably see my journey of figuring out, I'm sure you can, of how to talk about all these things that I care about as one cohesive person. Because I also went to this kind of, I'm going to be a yoga instructor now, and everything needs to be a little bit calmer and a little bit from this place. Whereas what I was doing right before that was going to grad school and working with survivors of trauma and activism and this totally other experience. And so neither one on its own felt right to me, but I didn't really know what to do. And it's mm-hmm. now that I've incorporated all of that fierce activism, that compassion and calmness. And I don't have it all figured out yet. I'm still working on it. But the idea that all of that can be present versus not, I don't have to just pick the yogi and that image or the activist and that image, but what does it mean for me to be doing all those things?
Yeah.
Which I guess is mindfulness.
Yeah, I love that. And it's like what you're saying, it's like honoring the wholeness of yourself, honoring the wholeness of our human experience, the reality of all the things that are happening in the world and in our lives. And we don't want to bypass any of that. It's like, how do we be fully present with that and do our best in each moment to respond as skillfully as possible? And we don't always get it right. But then how can we have compassion for ourselves in those moments? Another little practice I've been doing in that regard is from things like simple mistakes. Oh, shoot, I just spilled my green juice all over my white shirt, or knocking over something, or getting in a little fender bender, whatever. It's like in those moments, we can really be so hard on ourselves and mean to ourselves, or like when we fail at something and we maybe react in a way we wish we wouldn't have because we weren't regulated. And what I've been doing, instead of the normal like internal self-criticism of, gosh, you're such an idiot, how could you do that? What's wrong with you? It's, oh, okay, like I'm human. How human of me? How human of me? And that just helps like me calm myself down and have compassion for myself. And then I'm able to move forward in a much better way than this like angry sort of like self. It's just, yeah. So that's been really helpful for me too, and has been part of my mindfulness. Is that happens probably weekly, if not daily, at some point. Like those just default things. So
I love that. How human of me. I think for me, mindfulness in general and paying more attention is, it like almost sneaks up on you, where mm-hmm. moments become more mindful and without you having to do it, where all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, look at that awareness that I suddenly have. I had this moment where I did my 200 hour at Yoga North in Duluth.
Yeah.
And so once a month during that time, I would drive from up north down to Duluth, and I was late for one. And I'm for a Friday evening, and I'm racing down the shore, and I'm stressed. I'm almost crying because I'm like, I'm going to be late. And then I had this moment that felt almost like a little what is happening, because I just started laughing.
I love it.
And I was just like, I'm stressed to show up a few minutes late to my yoga and mindfulness training.
Yeah.
One, I think they're going to understand.
Right.
And two, I'm going to be late now either way. So I either get to be upset about, like, I had this whole thing in my car on the way there. It was like, I'm going to be late. So I guess I just have to say, I'm going to be late. And I can either spend the next half hour stressed, or I can turn music back on and enjoy myself and get there safely. But
right.
It almost like that moment like snuck up on me.
Yeah. I love that so much. It's like we create so much suffering.
Yes.
With doing those patterns, right? It's, we're in this anyway. This has happened. And now I'm going to make myself more miserable.
Yes.
When it's already, shoot, I'm late. I'm disappointed. I don't value that. I like being on time. And, or we can be like beating ourselves up miserable, maybe getting a car accident or something. Yeah, absolutely. I love that, Carly. It's so true. And it's, but also watching how quickly we go to that first, right? That's how default these neural pathways are in our bodies. So yeah, these practices, I like to say the more you practice, the more you can access. So the more we have that mindfulness, the present moment awareness, interrupt those patterns and do something different, then, like you're saying, it's like the effort becomes effortless. It just becomes part of how we live and how we are versus a really hard thing we're always struggling with. I just had read something when I was on a little retreat this year that really struck me as well. It said, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I have all these writings on my board here in my office, but like I have that up there because I'm like, oh wow, that's so true. Like, even though we can know all these things, Sean Aker, the Happiness Advantage author, says information is not transformation. So we can know it, but it's like actually doing it is when the transformation happens, right? And so
information is not transformation. Yeah. Just hit me really hard.
Yeah, we have so much information. We learn things, we read things, we take
training. You're like, got it, check, nailed it.
But it's in those moments when I'm driving and late and beating myself up, that's when the transformation happens, when you actually do the thing differently. So I think that's really powerful. And I'm just watching my own default patterns and my default mode network, which as a trauma survivor, I am like really strongly wired to be like in this kind of anxious, stressed, frazzled state. And it's sometimes I'll be like taking a shower or something, which is totally benign. And I'm like, why am I there? I don't need to feel frazzled in the shower.
Yeah.
Just chill out, wash your, you might notice the way that it just creeps up because it's just been such a part of, it's such a part of our culture, the hustle culture, the urgency culture, the, you know, grind culture.
Fine. You're celebrated for being overworked and too busy.
Totally. So it's, oh yeah, of course I feel that way, but I don't need to. So I want to like, how I do anything is how I do everything. How can I infuse more mindfulness across my day-to-day experiences?
I think what we're both speaking to is a reminder for probably ourselves. We always need reminders again and again, but also for listeners that it's a practice. I know it sounds really cliche, but like the information is not transformation. That's gonna sit with me for a good while now.
Yeah.
That is so true that it's just, it is so powerful that we can, we know something. That's a thing I intellectually know, but until I see it and feel it and experience it, and a reminder to listeners, that's why we call this a practice. You're not going to shut up the voice in your head that's been telling you're dumb for 20 years in one meditation session. I mean, if you do, oh my gosh, tell me what you did. But this, what we're speaking to as two people who do this work intentionally for work and for our personal practice, that we're still learning, is just a reminder of if that's a barrier, if people feel like it needs to be perfect, I just want to keep shattering that idea.
Oh, and sometimes we'll be in a really good space and our practice is more fluid and it seems like it's in every area of our life, but then like a hard thing happens, right? Or like we're stretched in ways we've never been stretched. And then all of a sudden these other things pop up again, and that's okay too. And I think it's so beautiful to me. I always am like, oh, okay. Like I had an experience where I used to have really bad panic attacks when I was younger. And then there was some like loss upon loss in my family due to overdoses and like really tragic things. And all of a sudden I was like having some panic attacks. I'm like, what is going on here? And then I was just like, wait, instead of getting upset with myself or feeling like, oh, I'm not as far along as I thought I was or something like that, beating myself up, I was like, oh, little body, like what's going on in there? What do you need from me? Obviously you're trying to tell me something through these sensations, through these symptoms. And then I was able to give myself, my body, these little parts of me that are struggling what they need instead of feeling like I'm a failure, right? And that's so powerful. But yeah, at any point, we never know. We just went through the loss of my father-in-law in our family, which is really significant. And he's younger and it was this unexpected thing. And gosh, when you're in the throes of grief, so much comes out. So yeah, there's just so many seasons of life, so many things we're going to be handed, but it's so powerful to have these practices available to us. And if we do engage with them in the good times, the easier times, then it's so much easier to be like, oh, lifeboat. Like there's a life raft right there. I know this works for me and I can grab onto that when things are really stormy and hard.
I think in the very beginning, years and years ago, my idea of yoga and mindfulness was that that I would eventually get to an end goal. Like I would be able to check the box and be like, oh good, that mental health stuff is gone and dusted. And now it's a response of, oh, these things are going to happen. Things are going to happen that are upsetting, that are hard. People are going to pass away. People, it, like all of these tragedies of life.
Right.
It's not the avoidance, because avoiding them doesn't work out either. I think we can probably both speak to that a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But instead, having tools to handle them is actually the game changer.
Yes, totally. That is the point of it all.
Right.
And yeah. And we can watch, right? We watch the world, we watch the news, we watch social media, and we just see the suffering that is ensuing with a lack of that. And it's so sad to witness. And it's just a stark reminder of, again, how revolutionary this is, how deeply important it is. And as we live our precious lives, like you said, like how many moments have we spent spiraling because we're late or beating ourselves up or whatever it is, where we're missing out, right? We're like not accessing. I love that you're like, I'm just going to turn on some music. I might as well enjoy myself.
Yeah.
We're blocking ourselves from joy and love and pleasure and being alive and just being in misery. If there's enough suffering and misery as it is, like we don't want to like add to it more. So that's my biggest thing. If I can just suffer less and have less misery in this human experience, sign me up.
Yes, I love that. Same.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share with listeners?
Gosh, I just think, again, like just that reminder of direct mindfulness. It is right here. It is accessible. It doesn't have to be complex or take a ton of time. Search out or try. I'm sure Carly shares lots of beautiful ideas of practices or some of the things I shared today. Try some of them out, and some might work for you and some might not, but keep trying until you find something that works, and then just incorporate it and make it accessible for yourself.
I love that. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I could talk to you for a lot longer.
The same. Thank you, Carly. It's so beautiful to be with you again.
Thanks for listening to an episode of the Mindfulness Monday podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can help us get it into the ears of more listeners by rating and reviewing it wherever you're listening on your favorite platform. Contact WTIP and let them know that you enjoy the podcast so we can keep creating content like this. See you next Monday.